You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome to the Sunday edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning, kicking off your day here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Happy that you'll be with us for the next 3 hours. George Kurtz and I taking you through all the way till 10. We'll pass that off to the NFL Combine special with Corey Parson, Joe Lisi, Rich Giamanello. I guested with those guys yesterday for about an hour after our Roto Experts in the Morning show. Good time, great information. Those are two guys you really want to listen to concerning the talent of the NFL players, future NFL players, and how they fared on the field as opposed to, as George refers to, how they fared in the underwear Olympics. But, George, we do have a little bit of a highlight story, despite the fact that we both criticized the importance of the 40 yesterday. We have a new record. John Ross, wide receiver from the University of Washington, breaks Chris Johnson's record 4.22. I got to say, it didn't look like it, but the guy's so smooth, he breaks the record. And unfortunately, he doesn't get that island.
Why?
He was not wearing Adidas cleats. He needed to be wearing a specific type of Adidas cleat. So Adidas gets the marketing exposure. Nike gets the marketing exposure because he was wearing these new Nike Vapor cleats. So he breaks the record with Nikes, and Adidas doesn't have to pay off on their bet.
Now, you know, you and I talked about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Didn't you have to wear the Adidas cleats? I mean, how are you not wearing it? I mean, maybe Nike gave him something too. I don't know. Maybe Nike had some kind of incentive there. But, hey, if you know you're that fast, he had to know he's got a shot at it. How are you not wearing the Adidas cleats? Maybe he couldn't afford the taxes on the island.
That's true. But to your counterpoint, maybe he knew he had a chance to break the record by wearing the cleats that he was comfortable with, and he did it. So I can't really argue with his logic, although I totally understand where you're coming from. If I was like a fat offensive lineman, I absolutely would have worn the Adidas cleats.
I'll wear boots. I'll wear Timberlands. Who cares?
Just for the fun of it. You know, the one I think you and I, maybe it was the day before, you know, watching the NFL Combine, watching the agility drills for the offensive linemen, in some ways you almost felt bad for them because it's just, it's not their core competency. So watching those guys doing the underwear Olympics and try to shuffle around in the three-cone shuttle drill is kind of funny. But, you know, I guess the one difference with this one, as opposed to some other guys that were quick. Now, Chris Johnson, obviously, you know, he was a very high draft pick, but some guys in recent memory that came close to the record or really ran in the 4.2s range, Dre Archer from the Steelers, he was a mid-round pick, and the guy's already out of the league. John Ross was projected to be a first-round pick, probably in the top three wide receiver discussion. I don't know that it launches him into the top two over Corey Davis or Mike Williams, but I think it just solidifies him in the top three. He's similar in size and stature to Brandon Cooks, George, and obviously he's been very successful at the start of his NFL career, these trade talks notwithstanding.
You know, it's funny, you bring up Cooks. Apparently, New England offered their first-round pick. Obviously, it'd be the last pick in the first round, and New Orleans said no. So it lets you know what they're looking for.
Yeah, looking not to bolster the best team in the league.
Why would they care? Of a division, of the conference.
Yeah. But it does give you some insight as to what they're looking for. I wonder if New Orleans is looking for immediate help, too, like veteran players to come in.
I thought, I wanted that as well.
You know, maybe not just picks. And clearly, I'm sure they didn't sneeze at the number one offer, but I think a team like New Orleans that, let's be honest, they're still struggling just to play .500. Football. I think they need some immediate help. They might be looking O-line, D-line, and the like. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, I did read a little bit, George, about that ridiculous three-team trade involving Romo and Cousins. Like, who? And even at the end of the article that I read, I think it was from Ian Rappaport or Chris Westerling at NFL.com. At the end of the article, it says the talks are in such preliminary stages there's really no chance of this ever happening. I know a lot of rumors get floated out there, but that one almost seemed kind of irresponsible, where, well, somebody just threw it off the wall and I figured I'd report on it. You know what I mean?
I mean, listen, I get it where San Fran gets their quarterback, all right? They get Cousins. No, it might make some sense for Washington because, hey, yeah, okay, we'll trade Cousins, but we still got a good quarterback in Romo, just not a long-term one. You know, maybe they don't mind paying Romo what it would take to readjust his contract. Either way, they'll save money. It won't be $24 million a year. And this is probably the one way where Dallas does get a decent draft pick for Romo, because they'd be letting him go to a division rival. Yeah, but I just don't see this. Do you think Jerry Jones is going to want to face Romo twice a year? What if Romo lights up the Cowboys secondary and they win that division, which is possible? I mean, forget it. It would embarrass. Jones doesn't want Romo to go to Houston because it's down, even though it's the other conference, because it's down the road from Dallas. There's no way. I mean, really, no way. Unless it was pick or picks coming to Dallas they just can't turn down, there's just no way Jones is letting him go to Washington, Philadelphia, the Giants.
And I know this is total conjecture, but it was an interesting rumor, so that's why I'm bringing it up. And the trade ultimately was San Francisco gets Cousins, Dallas gets the number two overall, Washington gets Romo. That's the bones of the deal. Yes, forget all other picks and players that would be involved, right? Just so we clarify it for the listening audience.
And then Dallas would do that, yes.
Right. The team that I think makes out worse is Washington, because they actually unsettle their quarterback position. Do I think Tony Romo is better than Kirk Cousins? Yeah, I do. But I can't argue with Cousins' production over the last year and a half. If a deal like that ever happened, it would send up so many red flags about the type of guy Washington thinks Kirk Cousins is. I mean, how much better do you want him to play? Yes, we want him to play better in clutch situations, but it's a team effort. I'm not pinning it all on Cousins. I don't think he's as good as his stats, but how could you argue with them?
Dallas is not getting the number two overall pick for Romo. That's not happening.
That's right.
It's not. If anything, Washington would keep the number two overall pick and maybe trade their third-round pick, second-round pick. That's about what Romo's worth, somewhere around there. Romo probably right now, if Dallas trades him for a pick, anybody else but the NFC East, is probably worth around a fourth. You know, so Dallas has to weigh, is that fourth-round pick even worth it, or they bid up with the cap savings of cutting him post-June? I think it was $14 million this year and $10 million next year. That's what it would be around. If they trade him, that all gets really put into this year, $24 million, unless they readjust that contract, which they might do. So Dallas has to think about that first. Now, granted, I think there would be a premium if he gets traded within the division, which would only be Washington, Giants, and Philadelphia don't need a quarterback. So, like I said, maybe that fourth-round pick is now, I could see it being a third and a sixth, or even I could see it being a second. It's not going to be a first. So it wouldn't even be Washington's first-round pick, which is, what, 17th. You know, but there's no way that Romo's going for the second overall. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, it really wouldn't make any sense to me. So I just thought there was a rumor that was passed around a lot. There was a lot of discussions. Washington fans on social media were so fired up about the veracity of the rumor. I just figured I'd talk about it for a minute.
I heard the rumor as well.
Yeah, get them even more fired up. It's a crazy rumor. Yeah, but this is the time of year for that kind of stuff, right? We're going to be entering this league year. Free agency is turning over here in the next few days. And we're going to see some wild offers from now until the end of April when the draft starts. So, that's the kind of stuff that we'll see. I think
as a Cowboys fan, I'd love for it to happen.
Yeah, of course. I do think, going back to the Brandon Cooks thing, I do think that's very real. You and I have speculated a little bit as to why they would be getting rid of him. He's going into his fourth year, so they have complete control of him. But as you illuminated the audience yesterday, it really does add value to Cooks in the trade market to trade him now, as opposed to waiting and exercising an option for him when he really might be looking down the barrel of free agency. Right now, the upside for Brandon Cooks is that even if he doesn't hit the market, he might get a long-term deal with some guarantees, and he won't have to worry about the free agency market.
Yeah, it does make sense. If they're serious about trading him, and it's all signs point that they are serious about it, that they want to move him for whatever reason, salary cap reasons, they can't afford him in 2 years. He's a Maybe he's a problem. I don't think that's really the thing, that he's a huge problem there. But maybe he's rubbing Sean Payton the wrong way. Maybe you brought it up yesterday, that game last year where they went big time, yet he still went off because he didn't get his touches. Maybe that's rubbing Payton the wrong way. And they feel like, hey, we will. Let's get rid of him. I don't want to deal with the headache. Or maybe they just say, hey, we have enough offense. We need defensive help. So we need, you mentioned the player or a pick or both. And they'll see what they can get here. So if that's the case, you're not going to pay him anyway? Yes, then you need to move him now. You really don't want to wait all that much longer. His value goes down when teams won't be able to hold him in control for as long. And as we've seen over and over again, when are you going to trade him? At the trade deadline? This is not Major League Baseball, hockey, or the NBA where you see trades made in season. In football, they really do need to be made prior to the season. And even then, really, when was the last time, Mike, we got a good football trade? I mean, a real football trade.
The one thing I would say is that it's not a blockbuster trade, but it was absolutely eyebrow-raising when Jamie Collins was dealt before the trade deadline this year. That's the best player I can remember being involved in some time. Clearly, we see blockbuster trades regarding picks, the Rams with the RG3 trade to Washington, and then last year the Rams again involved in going up to get Goff and Philly going up to get Wentz. So in that sense, regarding the draft, you see a lot more wheeling and dealing. But Jamie Collins is really the best player I can remember in a while. I guess, frankly, the Pats, yet again, they traded Chandler Jones last year. So those guys scooped up picks and the way the Pats do. Did they weaken their defense? Not enough to not win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Pats aren't afraid to make moves. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you got to like them. They believe a player's not fitting in, causing problems, not following the Belichick way, or they want to move him because they're not going to pay him. They don't want to give him up for free. They move him. Collins wasn't working out for whatever reason. Doesn't really matter now. So they get a pick for him. Good for New England. They do think outside the box. They're not going to hold people, cut up their nose or spite their face. They move on. Not working? Move on. And we'll find somebody else. I find it interesting that assuming that report is true, and it does seem to be true, they offer the number one overall, people 32nd pick, right? So let's say we can get Cooks, get that wide receiver that can blow a top man. If they were to get Cooks, blow that top off of defenses. But New Orleans apparently does want more. I think New Orleans, you figure they would talk about Tennessee and Philadelphia. Tennessee has the, 18th pick, their second pick in the first. I'm sure they're aiming for that, or Philadelphia's 14th overall pick.
Yeah, I think that plus some players. To explore that for a second, Cooks in the Pats offense, I just kind of wonder what that would look like. And you figure Edelman's role doesn't get disturbed at all. So Cooks plays, he's played a lot in the middle. He's known for explosive plays, but he plays a lot in the middle in New Orleans too. First down chain mover type of guy. So I wonder what that would look like in New England. You don't need necessarily two guys in the middle. Maybe they're realizing the end is near for Gronk, so to speak, relative to where he was in his career a couple of years ago. I mean, obviously Gronk is spending a lot of time on the sidelines these last few seasons. So I just wonder if they're trying to, I wonder what that would look like. Would it look like Randy Moss's year looked in 2007? I don't know. I'd be really curious to see how that would look, but you would have to put the over-under on Brandon Cook's receptions in New England at 85.
You got to think he would do pretty well. All right. Yeah. I don't think he would do quite as well as he does in New Orleans, more of the, in that dome, they throw a lot in New England too, but more options in Edelman, you're right. They can't both play in the slot. One's got to play outside. But think about it. Edelman, Cooks, Gronk, they'll have a running game. How strong, we don't know. It depends on who comes back there. But, there'd be a lot of teams in the AFC going, you just have to be kidding me.
Yeah. It would be – they had one of the best offenses in the league this year without that kind of personnel. And if you added Gronk back in and Cooks – I didn't even know what you would do. It would be like game over before the season even started. They blew out a team in the AFC Championship game, and here we sit, and they would have gotten even better offensively. Brady would just be like, sweet, number six is coming. He'd be the happiest guy in the world, and he wouldn't even think about retirement. To explore the New Orleans thing, George, for a second, it would be more important if he wasn't happy with the Cook scenario more than Peyton is Drew Brees. And I wonder if he's the one that is kind of irritated. He and Peyton have an unusually tight relationship, I would say, between coach and quarterback. We talked in past shows about how important that relationship is, coach to quarterback and to GM. But I would think that if Brees is unhappy, that they would explore options there. Now, you look down their team, they've made some interesting kind of free agency additions last year. They added Paul Kruger. They added Nick Fairley. And they added a few other guys. Sheldon Rankins was their number one pick last year, and he spent a lot of time, unfortunately, injured. Cameron Jordan was hurt for a period of time last year. They had some talent on this defense, and I just wonder, that's why I think it's less about picks and maybe about adding somebody immediately to try to get them over the top in the division to compete with Atlanta. So, it is a curious trade to me, but it seems that they would feel comfortable with Thomas, Snead, Brandon Coleman, with Kobe Fleener at tight end, and then obviously the cache of backs that they have in Ingram and Hightower and so on. So it seems to me like they weaken that wide receiving core quite a bit, but they obviously feel comfortable with Thomas and Snead.
Like I said, if they are looking for a player, I don't see this trade ever happening if it's purely a player, because it's going to be what defensive player are you targeting for Brandon Cooks? You would need, obviously, a pretty good player. What do you want, a cornerback? You're not going to get a pass rusher. No team's giving you a pass rusher. All right, I don't see that happening. A linebacker, I could see a pick and a lesser player. It's a team that might have extra, a third linebacker, something like that. But
I think that's right. I think that's right. I think that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, I still think the pick has to be the main thing here. You draft your own guy, because we've seen this before. Even if the team did have an extra whatever, let's say that a linebacker, just for argument's sake here, does he fit your system? Because you and I touched on this yesterday as well, as far as an overall general, not specific to any one team. But, if you trade for somebody or you sign somebody in free agency, it doesn't fit your system. You try to, you square peg, round hole and all. It doesn't work a lot. So now you didn't get quite as good a pick as you could have gotten because you wanted the player. Now the player doesn't work either. You have to be really, really sure that the player is going to fit your system. Alex said, maybe New Orleans is targeting somebody. They found someone they do believe fits their system. But overall, I think a player would be more of a throw-in, a little extra, but nobody all that great is going to really help them immediately.
Yeah, and I think a part of this, too, is a reaction to they signed Jairus Byrd at safety just in 2014 to a six-year, $56 million deal. They just released him the other day. He was scheduled to make just under $8 million this upcoming season. So he had injuries throughout his time there, and he was – in his first season with the Saints, he only played four games. So ultimately, it wasn't a successful run, and they decided to move on with it. They have younger safeties there in Kenny Vaccaro. They have Delvin Bro at corner. So I think they're going to need to continue to add pieces on the offensive line to keep Brees healthy and defensively all the way across the board. So we'll continue to track that one because I think that is the most real trade that has a chance of happening in the near term. But we'll talk about the combine. We'll talk about NFL free agency, and we'll definitely talk about MLB all throughout the next 3 hours. It's Mike and George until 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George here till 10. And the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package for 2017 is here. Stay ahead of the competition with in-depth articles and insights from our award-winning analysts. Prepare for your draft with our new and improved cheat sheet generator. Get access to fully sortable projections and over 800 player profiles. Enter promo code FREERADIO at checkout for a special discount on the RotoExperts.com exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package. Now, so George, with that being said, we have a little bit of news regarding.
We have more news, Mike. Mike, what is today, Mike?
Oh, today. Thank you. I just got it. I thought some other kind of music was playing through my headphones, so I was trying to shut it down. That was a happy birthday little tune right there. Today is my birthday. I'm 39 years old forever, George. I'm sticking with that.
Liar.
But Thank you for playing that. And yes, today is my B-day.
Happy birthday, Mike. And look, he woke up early and is here to entertain and inform America.
That's right. That's right. I don't take my – yeah. Were you one of those people? That's a great point, because I have a good friend of mine who, you know, I'm 44 years old. He's going to be – he's 2 weeks younger than me. He's going to be 44 in a couple of weeks. He, without consequence, takes every year off. Every year he takes his birthday off. If his birthday's on a Wednesday, he takes off from his job. If his birthday's on a Friday, he's off from his job. If it's a Monday, he's off. Whatever, whenever it falls, he's off. No excuses. He doesn't want anybody to hear him. He doesn't want to hear any complaints about it. Were you the type of person that would do that, like treat yourself on your birthday and just do something fun by yourself or with other people?
I generally don't publicize my birthday. If people ask, I'll tell you. I don't try and hide it, but I won't just volunteer. You'll have to work to find out when my birthday is. I believe I did
all right,
an old school
I'm asking
fantasy.
Now. When's your birthday?
August 21st.
All right.
Yeah, I got a ways to go. But I did an old school fantasy. Scott Engel didn't know, and whoever else I was doing the show with that day, which would have been probably Jake and Cha-Cha.
Well, there you go. So, yeah. So, I don't feel the need to take off on my birthday. Today's Sunday, whatever. We'll do the show. We'll be done by 10, and I can enjoy it with my family. I'm okay with that. I don't have any big things planned. Just kind of relax and enjoy the day, I think. I wish it was a little nicer out. It's freezing cold here in New York, but we'll see what we can get done. Maybe.
You know what's great about the nicer out, Mike? Let me tell you. Yeah. My stepfather went to, they went on a cruise. They flew in. They went to cruise out of the Caribbean. You know, nice warm weather. You know, they were in Fort Lauderdale. They flew in last night.
Oof.
Yeah, got in about 11 o'clock. Yeah, that's welcome back to New York.
That's a tough entry point right there, my friend. Not an easy day to come back. I mean, I basically hightailed it into the house last night at around 6 o'clock, and I didn't even think about going back outside. So glad I didn't have to do that. I would say if you folks want to reach out to us today, you can hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. George is at George Kurtz. I'm at Mike Blewett. We're assisted today by Pete Considori. And you can also give us a call today at 84-FNTSY. MLB drafts are certainly increasing in pace. I have a couple of mock drafts scheduled for myself this week, George, so we'll get a chance to talk about that next Sunday. Next Saturday will be George and Matt Modica. Just a little bit of business there because I will be out of town. I'm going to be attending some basketball tournaments in Pittsburgh and D.C. and all over the place. So I'm looking forward to that. And, George, I promise I'll call in with all the reports of all the college basketball news that I find out next Saturday. But
Pete, any calls from Mike next Saturday, you can just ignore them.
A piece of news that I was reading before the show today, Rockies outfielder David Dahl and left-handed pitcher Chris Russon have injuries that will keep them out for an extended period, said manager Bud Black after his club. This news sort of came out yesterday. But in any event, Dahl's been nursing an upper back issue that restricted him to 2 Cactus League games and 5 plate appearances. Russon hurt his right side Friday as he struck out Greg Allen for the second out of the 5th inning and was immediately removed from the game. So David Dahl was actually a guy, George, that we looked at as a possible breakout player, or rather a good value player a little bit later in drafts. So your thoughts on David Dahl, how does it impact your thoughts about maybe the Rockies lineup in general?
Yeah, that's a problem. All right, let's say January, we were all high on Dahl, probably a top 5, top 6 round pick. You know, plays good hitter, young prospect, up and coming, playing in Colorado, all that good stuff. Right, he's going to hit 9,000 home runs, driving 2 million runs, and all this other stuff because he's Colorado, the thin air of Coors Field. So we loved him. And then we started to get a little worried. Oh, you know, they still got Geraldo Parra there. It's 4 outfields for 3 spots. You know, Desmond's going to play first base, so they lose that as an option to get rid of one of these guys. And they didn't trade anybody. You know, so we started to get a little worried about playing time. And now you throw this back injury in there. You know, and it seems, as you just said, it does seem to be much worse than anticipated. You know, so now we don't know if and when he's going to play. I mean, I'm not touching him. You know, I really didn't like that situation anyway. Like I said, when you throw in the more serious than initially thought, that always scares me. You know, so But what is that? First team's going to be out a couple of days. More serious will be a couple of weeks. Maybe he's fine by opening day. I don't think so, but maybe. But my bigger problem is it's back. We've seen this over and over again. Back injury is not good. You know, it's what pretty much ended Don Mattingly's career. It's what's crushing David Wright. You know, you deal with a spine and back. So now, I'm not saying his career is over by any means, but I'm saying it's hard. It's not the easiest thing to come back from. You know, so yeah. To answer your question, Mike, I'm just not touching it. I'll let someone else deal with it.
Yeah, just and to piece the quotes together on February 28th, February 27th, 28th, we wanted to be really cautious, overly cautious. We think he's going to be fine. He's been feeling it for a couple of days. Beyond that, he said it's been ongoing. I don't think it was a one-time event. It was a gradual sort of soreness. He'll be fine. Fast forward to yesterday, and you get the nebulous extended period. It's an upper back injury. I don't know if that means upper back into neck injury, but I think I'm with you, George. Like, how could I possibly? This is a dart against the wall scenario. I have no idea what's going to happen, and it's all bad news. Reading between the tea leaves, as you set it up perfectly, he was already battling for playing time with Parra. So certainly, he's not a guy I'm going to take any kind of chance on unless it's so late and I hear something. By something positive by the time that my drafts roll around. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. As you said, he was somebody that we were looking at, a guy that could possibly, he's, you know, 22 years old. So he's a guy who hopefully has a long career in front of him. But 2017, he's going to be playing from behind the eight ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's annoying, especially for I know from the Roto Experts email answer queue, I've seen Dahl in there a whole bunch during the offseason about keeping him. And almost, I'd say 95% of the time, I told him, yeah, you got to keep Dahl. You know, too good a player in that ballpark. You can't just let him go. There might have been some instances where you could because they had other great keepers. But overall, you were keeping Dahl. Yeah, he still will be a good hitter. What I'm saying is, like I said, if he was going around five or six, which is about where he was going, outfield two, outfield three, now you're dropping him down probably to double-digit rounds. I mean, you want to cover yourself here just in case that injury does end up being even worse than what they're saying now, or if he's just not the same player all year, or if this gives, you know, Colorado an excuse now to play him, you know, to platoon him, give him a lot of rest or more rest to make sure the back heals. There's just too many red flags here. I'm just not going to want to deal with it unless the value is there.
Yeah, I mean, George, how many times do we see a guy with a back injury just turn it around in the middle of the year? It just doesn't happen.
It's difficult, you know, because you're tweaking that back constantly when you swing. You think about how violent a swing is.
Yeah, it's just every single time you go out there for batting practice, for if you're in a game, it's the thing that your wrist and back injuries, they just never heal during the middle of the year. If that occurs to a guy, we just talk about how he's going to struggle for the remainder of the year if he can even stay in the lineup.
Yeah, it's tricky. Now, you already drafted him? You kept him, whatever? He's already on your team? Nothing you can do about it. You got to write it out. What are you going to do, trade him? You're not going to get much value right now. You at the very least have to see when he comes back and how he looks. He's a player, Mike, where if he does get the spring training games, I'll be watching that game. Yeah, you know, we all say spring training doesn't mean anything. Well, for certain players, it does, and Dahl is now one of them.
How about on the flip side of that, but since we talked about Gerardo Parra, your thoughts about him for this year? Now it seems like he's not going to have a challenger in left field, at least to start the season.
Well, you like that, right? He was getting drafted anyway, but late. You know, I thought he was actually a very pretty good value pick the way he was going because I thought he was going to play some. This is not a guy they were going to forget about. If there was an injury, obviously, hey, full-time player here. So I thought he was a good value pick. Now, let's just say for argument's sake that he was going in about round 18. I'll lift him up a little bit to probably around 14, but not immensely. Because I don't think there's a season ending for Dahl or anything like that. He may start the season on a DL, but come back. And same problem then. Well, if Dahl's back, you're talking about some kind of platoon, some kind of split. It might hurt both of them. But either way, if you're a Parra owner right now, you're thinking about taking him, he's going to play more than we originally thought.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Just to review his stats from last year, he played in 100 games, 381 plate appearances, 7 homers, 39 ribbies, 253. But his ability to get in the lineup every day will change that a lot. Does not take a lot of walks at all. You should just know that. So on base percentage, slightly higher than the batting average. But we'll see. You know, as you know, like we talk about all the time, George, he had 27 doubles. He's a guy that can maybe get you around the bases a little bit, and we'll see exactly what he can bring if he's playing on an everyday basis. Obviously, they have additions there, and Ian Desmond, who's slotted at first base right now, and we've talked probably ad nauseum at times about Cargo and Charlie Blackman and DJ LeMahieu and Nolan Arenado. And there's a lot, and Trevor Story. So there's a lot of guys that are pretty high draft picks at their positions in Colorado. Paro will be maybe one of the guys you get at value.
Yes, and it could be. I said that if this injury to Dahl doesn't end up putting him out more long term, then Paro is great value. You know, starting outfielder in Colorado, a guy who can hit. He's not the hitter of Cargo or Dahl, that Dahl's going to be for that matter, but he can still hit. He's certainly not someone of those, a throwaway who's out there for defensive purposes. No, he can hit. You mentioned he's got the old 11th commandment, thou shalt not pass without being swung at, so he's not going to walk. He's not going to help you in OBP leagues. I like that, huh?
Yeah, it's a good one. I like that one.
I'm proud of that one.
Yeah. So, we're going to take a quick break here, get to talk about another back injury. Matt Carpenter from the Cardinals will talk about after this. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. George, another piece of news on the MLB front is Matt Carpenter pulling out of the World Baseball Classic. And he's still bothered by stiffness in his back. Joe Torre, general manager of Team USA, said that he needed to remove Carpenter told Joe Torre that he needed to remove himself from the country's World Baseball Classic roster. So he's been missing from the St. Louis lineup for three straight days. Said he made the decision to pull out of the tournament on Friday after he felt continued discomfort while taking swings in the batting cage, particularly concerned about the tightness that could seep into the area around his oblique. So he missed a month during the 2016 season with a right oblique strain. Matt Carpenter currently slotted via Fantasy Pros as the number 73 overall player in draft rankings. So a very valuable player here who we're talking about an injury again.
Yeah, listen, I don't want to panic about most of these injuries I'm not panicking about. It's March 5th. Okay, remember, spring training started a week earlier this year because of the WBC. So, yeah, it's March. He's still got, 27 days then? 26, 28 days until, 4 weeks from today until opening day starts. And for the Cardinals, it's probably 29. They're probably starting on Monday or Tuesday. So they got plenty of time here for nagging little injuries like this. And that's what this reminds me of. Nagging little injury. Sometimes I think players look for excuses maybe not to play with WBC. Maybe starting to realize, you know what, I don't really want to play this anyway. I want to get ready for the regular season. You know, back is bothering me. I need to go work on it, whatever it is, strength and conditioning drills, blah, blah, blah. And they pull out. So just because he's not playing doesn't mean I'm panicking here and going, oh, my God, I got to drop Carpenter. Can't take him in my draft now. I don't feel that way with him. The injury to Carpenter and David Dahl is different. You know, Dahl's is definitely serious. Something's wrong. Carpenter, I think it's more just maybe soreness, maybe just getting back into the flow of taking swings every day, playing baseball. I think he'll be fine. I'm not changing my I'm not changing anything about how I feel about Carpenter, not on March 5th.
Yeah, he played in 129 games last year, and obviously, George, a good thing about Matt Carpenter is his versatility and multiple position eligibility. He spread it around last year, 40 games at second, 40 games at second base, 45 games at first, and 54 at third. If you see multiple rankings, you might see him listed more at third in rankings. That's simply because he played a few more games there than the others. But his multi-position eligibility is very helpful from a starting lineup situation when you have guys out or you have guys that on the bench on a particular day.
Yeah, positional flexibility, always nice. It's always nice to have that on your roster because you're going to have injuries. You know, we start 23 players. You know, you're going to have guys get banged up. It's always nice to be able to throw somebody around there, move them from third to second to first, whatever it might be. You're probably drafting as a third baseman or a second baseman, certainly not a corner infielder. But it's like I said, it's always nice to have that option. It really shouldn't change the draft strategy all that much on somebody. You know, you're going to move him up two rounds because of he can play multiple positions. It's a tiebreaker. It's something nice to have. Ben Zobrist, it adds extra value to him over the years because we pretty much could play him anywhere, it seemed like. Second, short, outfield, first, whatever. That's always nice to have. But like I said, you don't want to overvalue somebody because they have that.
Yeah, but, So I'm looking at third base rankings, NFBC average draft positions. They have Carpenter listed at third base as the sixth best third baseman. So, you know, the irony is he's a multi-positional flexibility guy, but in addition to that, he's a pretty high draft pick. We talked about you can potentially wait on third base because of its depth, but there's superstars at the top of those rankings. I'll say that me personally in my head-to-head league, I'm always looking for a guy with that positional flexibility. I had Josh Harrison last year. I had Justin Turner the year before. So it doesn't mean that those guys are going to put me over the top to win a championship, but it certainly kept me from taking a zero at positions on given days.
Yes, it comes in handy. It does. You'll use it at some point during the season. If you don't, hey, God bless, you stayed healthy. You know, it's one of the keys in my mind of winning a league. You know, I've said it over and over again, more in regards to how you draft. A draft is nice, gets you off to a good start. You know, a draft can really lose you a league more than win you a league. The most important thing during the season, the moves you make, roster moves, trades, and staying healthy. You know, this is why I don't try and stay away from guys like Giancarlo Stanton, who are going to get hurt every year. That's why I'm not going to be drafting David Dahl, because he's already hurt. Don't need to take that chance. Carpenter still draft. I'm not worried about those kind of injuries. But, You want to, you know, if you end up being the team that has 4, 5, 6, 8 guys on the DL and it happens, well, you're done. There's nothing you could have done about it. You know, you're done. But why take so many players who are already hurt? You're sort of asking to have that problem. You know, and in most leagues, unless you're playing in an 8-team league, we have you know, all stars on the waiver wire. Now you suffer 3, 4, 5 all these injuries. It's going to take its toll. There's no one to pick up. So I try and stay away from this. But this is also why positional flexibility is nice, because maybe, you know, okay, there are no third basemen on the waiver wire, but there are second basemen, so you can move Matt Carpenter around. Or it moves Ben Zobrist around. It's why it's nice to have.
Yeah, and just on Carpenter, to recap, he did miss a month last year, so he only played 129 games. But in those 566 plate appearances, he hit 21 homers, 271, which is, you know, slightly below his career average, but you'd expect him to be on that pace. The last 3 years, he hit 272, 272, and 271. I think you know what you're going to get from a batting average here, but 21 homers, 68 RBIs, and, you know, if he adds in a few extra games this year, you're looking at 30 home run potential. He hit 28 homers 2 years ago.
Yeah, like I said, I like Carpenter. I think you can make an argument. His ADP has been a little low. Mm-hmm. By low, I mean bad. That he should be going a little higher in drafts, maybe a round or two coming in. But once again, maybe it's the injury that we know about that's bothering people. I think sometimes people look at stats and don't realize what you brought up. He missed 33 games last year with the oblique. Yeah, so I think they're sort of forgetting about that. And then his numbers would be even better. He's at 21. Maybe he'd have 25 home runs, and that would look nicer. And people judge by numbers rather than looking overall context of why those numbers were what they were.
Yeah, and, you know, you slot him into the, you know, the Cardinals lineup. And I think given the fact that he could potentially be healthy this year, I think you're going to like the position that you find him in more often than not. I think I could see myself, you know, this news notwithstanding, I could see myself having somebody like Matt Carpenter on the team this year, and maybe having a player with positional flexibility that I can count on even more than I could Josh Harrison a year ago. So always good to explore that kind of stuff. Positional flexibility can be a really key part of, you know, putting you over the top, getting into the playoffs or whatever it is. Beyond that, Houston Street is somebody that we talked about. Is like his job is basically going to be lost as soon as the season starts, if not before then. He's got a right lat strain and will not throw for 3 to 4 weeks, putting his availability for opening day in doubt. We didn't like his chances, George, going into the year. You're the closer report guy. And now, what does it say for Camp Petrosian?
Well, really, I don't want to make light of an injury, but it's really the best news for everybody, including the Angels. You know, Mike Socha is one of those managers, and we see this a lot, that wants to have the closer be the veteran guy, the guy who's done it before, even though that guy is not very good anymore. And Houston Street just doesn't have much left at this point in his career. So this injury almost certainly means he doesn't start the season on the team, that he'll either be on the DL or be, you know, still recovering. Because even if you get 3 weeks, that's the 26th. You know what I mean? That gives you a week to get at the regular season. I guess it could happen. You only need to throw an inning. But it seems like more than likely he'll start the season on the DL. Petrosian should be the closer. I don't think there's any really much doubt that he should be the closer for L.A. Maybe Socha needs to see Pedroia come back and prove himself healthy. He's been a little banged up himself. Comes off the surgery from last year, that not an arm injury, but you could make an argument that he has issues of his own. But like I said, Socha seems to like to go with that veteran guy. I really hope they give it to Pedroia. They should. He is their best option. And the Angels could be a better team than people think this year. I don't think they can get a wild card spot. I don't think they can compete with Seattle, Texas, and Houston. But I don't think they're an awful team either. But here's your other problem. I already mentioned that Socha likes to go with the veteran guy. You know, Andrew Bailey is there too. And if he were to go with Bailey over Bedrosian, I think I would actually start crying.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that when you started talking about the veteran presence that he wants there. What's crazy too, though, is that, and I'm not saying bloodlines have to play a role, but you think on some level, Socha played in the same era as Steve Bedrosian. He's got to realize that from a mental attitude makeup standpoint, that Cam Bedrosian can do the job. He's got to be as set up as any younger player could be going into a particular season. So I would obviously want Bedrosian to get the job. I wish my draft had occurred already, because he was a guy that I was targeting pretty heavily based on what you and I and certainly Matt Modica have been talking about for the last couple of weeks. He was a guy that we really liked that you could get a little bit later.
Yeah, I'll say this again. You know, when it comes at the end of my draft, I'm not afraid to take guys like Bedrosian, Betances, and Miller. They're going early anyway. But top setup men, because I'd rather have these guys who are protecting my whip, protecting my ERA, and have a shot at saves down the line than take an SP4 or 5 off a Major League team that are going to blow up my ERA, blow up my whip, but probably get me a few more Ks and have a better chance at wins. It depends what you're looking for. What do you want more, the counting stats or the ERA ratios? That's the way I look at it. Now, there are some SP4s and 5s that are going to be very good. You know, the Mets have a loaded staff where maybe I do want one of their SP4s and SP5s. But most teams don't have that luxury. The SP4 is a guy who's going to get blown up from the maybe more often than not. So I'd rather have that top setup guy, especially, once again, this is how you follow your draft, especially if I wasn't able to get the closers that I wanted to get. You know, if I don't feel great about my saves, maybe I only got two closers, and I have one good one, but one so-so one. I'm in trouble in saves. So why not take a couple of one or two speculative setup men? Guy, you know, like I said, Bedrosian was perfect for this. Now, you're right. We've been playing up Bedrosian so long now that he wasn't a sleeper anyway. Everybody was pretty much probably had him at maybe number three after Miller and Betances as being the guy you grab here. But still, there are guys like that who are available who serve more than one purpose.
And I think what drives me nuts, too, is that if Socha were to go with Bailey, at this point, he was Cam Bedrosian was a first-round draft pick 7 years ago. He's 25. It's his fourth year in the league. It's okay to hand it over to him. He's got enough experience now that he's not going to fold under the pressure. And if he does, then you put him back to the setup role and bring Bailey in, or Street if he's healthy at that point. I say give it to him. I don't know why you would be waiting another year or more experience. He's got enough miles under the tires at this point to give him the job.
Yeah, once again, this comes down to managerial flaws. Some of these managers, we see this over and over again, keep going with a lesser player because he's a veteran and can handle the ninth inning. He has ninth inning mentality, whatever you want to call it. I get that. Not all relievers can pitch in the ninth inning. You know, those getting the last three outs of a game are the toughest three outs. You know, teams aren't willing to go down. They're going down fighting tooth and nail and all that stuff. So I get it. You know, but when you have a player who's obviously nowhere near as talented, closing out games, you know, don't you want the better player in there? Assuming he doesn't have a problem tonight, they're not going to choke. What are you worried about upsetting Street by putting him as a setup guy? Really? Who cares? What's he going to do? Walk away and take his money and go home? Goodbye.
Yeah, you know, and by the way, George, you do the closer report. Even the veteran guys lose the jobs anyway.
Everybody loses. Listen, I'll say it again. We have right now the closer report has 30 names on it. By the time the All-Star break comes, half those guys, this is not a joke, half those guys will be gone. Injuries, poor performance, someone outperformed them, whatever it is, they will lose their job. It happens every year. This is why we tell you during the draft, you can find closers in free agency. You know, during the season, you can find it. If you know how to play the fab game, you'll be able to find closers. But it's also why I say if you're worried about the fab game, you don't like playing, you don't feel you're very good at it, you're not going to pay attention as much, then don't be afraid to draft a couple of setup men now during your draft. You know, they'll serve two purposes. They'll give you a shot that they're going to get some saves during the season, and they'll protect your WHIP and ERA now.
Right. So good stuff. George and I will be back after this, all the way till 10 o'clock on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Welcome back. George and I continue to go through some of the stories in MLB, injury updates, players trying to get ready for the full day 162-game grind that is the MLB season. So Matt Wieters, George, a little bit more than a week since he officially signed with the Nats, and while he says he's getting close, he estimates he's still a few days away from appearing in his first Grapefruit League game.
Happy birthday, Mike!
Hold on, brother. You're going to do this for every segment. I appreciate it. I hope I have the happiest of birthdays, and I appreciate you acknowledging it multiple times. We can do this throughout the show. I have no problem with it. It is my B-Day, and I had some birthday cake yesterday, which was tremendous. And despite
what kind of
the
cake?
Fact that it was, I have to hand it to my wife. She really stepped up. She and my son, I guess, who technically picked it out. It was, we have this great bakery just about a mile from the house. And we, you know, we're kind of in the New York area. We tend to lean towards a Carvel cake for birthdays. It's nice and
yes.
easy, but, and I have no problem with that. But yesterday she went to the bakery. It's called Front Street Bakery, a place right near the house. And they do tremendous cakes. And this cake was basically like a devil dog cake, you know, like the old Drake's devil dog cake. So it was like sort of black, not black, chocolate type of cake. And it had that type of devil dog icing in the middle. I don't even know how to accurately describe it. But in that sense, it tasted like a devil dog. So it was really good. And despite the fact that I gave up dessert for Lent, I happen to be Catholic. You know, I try to do my best, not eat meat on Fridays, all that kind of stuff. But
you're one of those, huh?
I gave myself a dispensation to.
I'm already going to hell. I don't care.
Cake. Yeah, listen, I don't know. I don't know what it's worth, but I do my.
Give me
best,
a nice
I
steak think. On Friday.
Frankly, because. It's probably more of a weight loss situation than it is me being a good Catholic. So
I'll take the biggest cow you can find.
Yeah. So in any event, the cake was really, really good. And I may even have another piece today since it is my B-Day. So back to Matt Wieters. He still hasn't appeared in a game yet. He's been catching bullpen sessions. And he plans to catch and stand in the batter's box during a live batting practice session in the next few days. He likes the fact there's an extra week of spring training because of the World Baseball Classic, and the Nats weren't really worried about the learning curve for Wieters after signing him in late February. So Matt Wieters, currently according to the NFBC ADP, I know it's a position that you hate with all your heart, George, but Matt Wieters currently the 13th ranked catcher.
Yeah. Listen, I don't like when we say I hate catchers, and I do, it's fantasy related, not because I don't hate, I don't hate every catcher in
yes.
baseball.
All
personally.
Fantasy related.
It's all fantasy related. I just believe they get, they're going to sit once a week. They get banged up, foul balls, bats, squatting, runners. It's a brutal position, and I don't like wasting a high draft pick on them. Although that being said,
by the way, and Matt Wieters in particular is a guy who's seen his share of injuries.
In the last mock we did, I almost took Buster Posey because it seemed like everybody had the same philosophy as I went,
Whoa.
As I had, and Posey fell into, I think, round seven. Scott Engel grabbed him.
Wow.
And I thought about it. If he would have lasted to my pick in round seven, I might have grabbed him to change things up a little bit.
That was 12 teams?
Yes, just standard 12-team, 5x5. That draft actually was a quicker, slow draft rather than the other one I was complaining about a couple of weeks back. That one actually moved along and got done in less than a week. So yeah. I appreciated that. But anyway,
Posey's average pick, by the way, George, Posey's average pick, according to the NFBC, is 40th overall.
That's not what I've seen in the mocks. I think that's fourth round in 12-team yeah. leagues. So obviously, it'd be
that's
third round in 15-team leagues. That's psychotic to me. I can't do yeah. that. Not that he's yeah. not a great player. He is. I just can't take a catcher that early. I've been ending up with guys like Salvador Perez in round 12. It seems like almost every draft, and I'll take that. I'll take 20 home runs and 260 out of my catcher gladly. As for Wieters, I'm not worried about that he hasn't gotten on the field yet. Once again, we'll say it again. You already said it, actually. Spring training started a week later. This is not a big deal. He has plenty of time to get ready. 4 weeks right now is when the season starts from today. And I don't think it's when Baltimore season starts, so he's got more than that. If he gets on the field this week, he's got 3+ weeks. He'll be fine. You know, batters don't need as long as pitchers to get in shape. With Weeders, I'm more worried about, you know, he left Camden Yards for Washington. Hitters Park for a pitcher's park. Changing leagues. Does he know the pitchers as well? You know, and what's his first job for Washington? The pitching staff. That's his first job, you know, handling the catching
job,
not being a hitter. And it is a huge job. You know, so that's what I'm more concerned with there. I think you said he's 13th overall in catchers. That sounds about right. A catcher, too. I have no problem with him being a catcher, too. You know, but other than that, you know, the home runs he was hitting, you know, he had 17 last year. I understand he had 124 games. He's probably averaging around 20, 21. I think you're probably looking in the 12 to 15 range in Washington.
It's tough. Hitting eighth, according to a projected lineup that I'm looking at. Plenty of power ahead of him. Could be some guys on base, but ultimately, yeah, I think
he'll be pitched around a lot, too.
Yeah, that's right. So so there you go. That's the take on Matt Weeters. Talk a little bit about Buster Posey later, because I just want to get your sense on when they're finally going to move this guy from behind the plate. Anyway, that's 1 hour down. We got 2 hours to go. George and I will come back. We'll talk a little bit about the combine, some stories in the NFL. And then we'll continue to bounce back and forth between MLB. It is B-Day. Thank you for joining me on my birthday. So, George and Mike back for 2 more hours after this.